So today, the computer is changing our world. The way we do business, the way we travel, the way we communicate with each other.
Let me tell you about this guy. His name is Gordon Moore. In 1965, he noticed something. He saw that the number of transistors that could be crammed onto a microchip was doubling every 2 years. I recently read an article in The Economist that said, and I quote, "Moore's observation became an ambition." I found this particularly interesting, because apparently from that point on, everybody making computer chips was like, okay, well, I guess we better try and double the speed on computers every 2 years. And as we all know, that is exactly what happened. We've been making smaller and thinner components ever since, even stacking them in 3D, basically trying to keep up with Moore's law. But now, so it seems, we're approaching the limit. Please be advised that this is a horrible simplification of what's really going on in this industry, but that's why we have Rob on the show. My name is Michiel, and you're listening to Computers Don't Bite, a podcast by the Leiden Institute of Advanced Computer Science. In this show, you will hear computer scientists at the forefront of their respective fields as they attempt to explain to me what on earth they're doing.
So my name is Rob van Nieuwpoort. I was recently appointed as professor in Leiden at the LIAX. My chair there is called Efficient Computing and E-Science.
Thanks so much for being on the show. Yeah, it's so great to have you.
My pleasure.
We're using more and more computer power each day, as a manner of speaking, but also quite literally. And that's why it's immensely important to be thinking about efficiency.
So efficient computing is really broad. I try to make applications more efficient, software more efficient. That can be at a very small scale. So for example, smart sensors. It can also be at a very large scale. So high performance computing. So very large parallel programs or simulations that run in data centers.
So it's computers in the most technical, nerdy possible way you could talk about computers, that's your thing.
Yeah, exactly. Very okay. Technical, very low level.
Right. Yeah. So that must lead back to you being interested in computers from an early age.
Very early age, yeah.
What was your first computer?
A Commodore 64.
Right.
Yeah, it was. I think I was like 8 or 10. So I started programming basically immediately back then in BASIC, the good language to learn programming if you're a kid.
Yeah, and you were sort of hooked from that.
Yeah, on day one I was hooked.
So then, okay, that was the Commodore 64. It was all very rudimentary. When was the PC after that? I remember my 386.
Yeah, 386.
386 same DX. Year.
Yeah, DX. Yeah, indeed. There were two. The DX was a little bit more powerful.
Yeah, and then you had the 486.
Yeah. Yeah, I also had one of those. And then I started gaming more, but also programming in a little bit higher level languages like Pascal and C, which are still being used today, actually.
And so you're fluent in multiple computer languages.
Yeah, still. So I guess as a computer scientist, you learn the concepts behind programming languages. So if you know the concepts and you know one or two, then you basically know them all.
Right.
They're basically all use the same concepts.
So if you look back at that the hardware development, starting from ranging all the way back to the Commodore 64.
Computers have become so immensely powerful that a laptop today is more powerful than a supercomputer 2 decades ago. The program is called EDL, for Efficient Deep Learning. So it's basically trying to make AI, artificial intelligence, more efficient.
More efficient in an energy sense, or also...
In multiple ways.
Multiple ways.
So efficiency is quite broad. Efficiency in terms of what kind of data you need for learning, for training the system. So less data is better in principle. But also energy, amount of computational power, the memory that's being used. So basically all aspects of efficiency.
And that's becoming more and more important, obviously.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So before we dive into that, what is deep learning?
Deep learning. Deep learning is a relatively new way of doing artificial intelligence. It's basically simulating the human brain, but in reality it's actually not the same, but there's an approximation of neurons in your brain, and those are simulated in a computer. And by feeding data into a deep learning system, it basically extracts features, it tries to learn from the data, from examples, mm-hmm. and it then tries to generalize them So you can ask different questions that are not exactly the same as in your data, but it basically learns the concepts.
And why is it then called deep learning and not just learning?
When I started my studies in 93, we also already had neural networks. And deep learning is basically a very big neural network. And deep means it basically relates to the number of layers of neurons inside such a network.
Okay, so there's multiple layers.
Multiple layers of neurons.
All right, okay. Yeah. Very complex. And now so tell me about the program that revolves around this deep learning.
Yeah, so the program is called EDL, Efficient Deep Learning. It's a combination or a collaboration between basically all the universities in the Netherlands, but also many companies. So in total, there are 25 PhD students who are doing research in this efficient deep learning for the different aspects of efficiency, but also very much applied. So from the start, we said, okay, we want to look at the fundamentals, but we also want to apply it in real practice for real applications. So we can really evaluate and test if our new algorithms and our methods actually work in practice, but also help society a little bit further.
By doing?
For example, we have many different use cases from manufacturing, but also self-driving cars, microscopy, MRI scans, analysis of that for cancer research. Very applied and very relevant for society.
Because all of these applications could benefit from more efficient computing.
Yeah, exactly. So basically AI or artificial intelligence is everywhere nowadays. Analyzing MRI scans, for example, they can actually beat a doctor nowadays by giving better predictions because they just have seen so much data, more than any doctor could ever see.
When we speak about this technology becoming more efficient, in what ways can it become more efficient?
We have these big data centers and more are popping up everywhere. And they use a lot of energy. It's an estimation, but these are numbers from the CBS, the Dutch Bureau for Statistics, that approximately 3.3% of our total energy use in the Netherlands is actually now going to data centers. For comparison, that's more than the whole NS, the National Railway Service.
Yeah, that's crazy. So every time I ask DALL-E or Midjourney to create this fun little image for me, I'm using a lot of energy, and that's why all of these parks are being built, basically, essentially.
Yeah.
And as a consumer, my footprint is relatively small. Then there are these huge companies that are doing the exact same thing, but on a huge scale.
Yeah, exactly. Right? So that's one thing, but there are basically two sides to deep learning. One is training the network with a lot of data and information, so it actually understands the patterns in the data, and that's very energy inefficient, you could say. It takes a lot of energy. And there's what we call the inference side. That's basically when you ask a question to the system. So you're no longer training, but you're just asking the questions. And that's what we basically do as consumers, right? Mm-hmm. That takes far less energy.
Okay.
So the most critical part to optimize is actually the training phase.
Yeah. And that's what your program is focusing on.
That's basically what we're focused on.
So how are you doing that?
Yeah. So what we did, it's already 5 years ago now, we brought together the Dutch leading experts in deep learning and the Dutch leading experts in efficient computing, because those were two completely separated worlds before then. It's quite a different research line, and they were simply not connected before. So we basically brought all those people together and we defined the program. Like I said, it's a public-private partnership with many SMEs, so medium and small enterprises, but also larger companies with use cases. So we really tried to bring together also the industry, big and small, use cases and research.
You mentioned making these processes, or we talked about making this technology more efficient. Can you give an example of an application where this has been the case in the program that you're working in?
Certainly. So we've been working on a use case in radio astronomy for quite a long time, already even before this program. And we're basically using a telescope called LOFAR, the Low Frequency Array. It's a telescope that's built by the Netherlands, by Astron, which is the Netherlands Foundation for Radio Astronomy. They're in Dwingelo, in Drenthe, in the northern parts of the Netherlands. And a radio telescope used to be a very large steel dish. But LOFAR is different. It's what we call distributed sensor network. So it's basically a combination of more than 100,000 small sensors, small antennas.
I've seen this on TV, maybe. They're scattered throughout, throughout like a piece of grassland, and there are all these little...
All these little antennas, and by themselves, they're not very powerful, not very sensitive. But if you have 100,000 of them, you basically, in software, combine them all.
With a powerful algorithm.
With a powerful algorithm, and then you basically see it as a large virtual telescope. And there, those fields of antennas are in the Netherlands, in multiple places, but also in the UK and Poland and France. So it's all over Europe.
And they can be connected together.
They're all connected by very fast networks. And all that data from the telescopes is brought together in Groningen. And just to give you an idea, that the data rate of those telescopes, those instruments, is more than the Dutch internet. So it's really data volume
more
is huge.
More than all of us Googling at the same time and
all
using
the data
iPhones.
That passes by through the Amsterdam Internet Exchange is roughly the same as this telescope.
How much gigabytes per nanosecond are we talking about?
Terabits per second.
Terabits per second, okay. Crazy, yeah.
Yeah, it's really crazy. So it's so much data that you cannot store it. You cannot keep it in memory. You cannot store it to disk.
You can't store it. No,
it's not possible anymore. So you basically have to process it and somehow... make a picture of it or analyze it in real time. Yeah, only then you can potentially store it. So you need very smart and very fast algorithms to do this.
Wow.
And a part of this we do with deep learning. And that's the link with this EDL program. And one thing I'm specifically interested in is system health management. So basically looking at the status of the telescope. Because like I said, it's a distributed sensor network. With these antennas and all those different places, hundreds of thousands of them. And there are networks tying them all together. And there's a very big computer system doing all this processing. So there are many, many components. And not because it's a bad design, it's because inherently it's such a big system, things basically break. And there can be a farmer who's plowing a field and he tears a cable. Or there's a sheep in a field that knocks over an antenna. Or there can be any number of things. A lightning storm. Basically, things go wrong. We built a deep learning network that monitors the data in the telescope and tries to say, hey, the telescope is working fine. Or, hey, maybe something is broken. I see something, an anomaly, something that shouldn't happen. And I think the root cause of it is this, an antenna or an amplifier that failed or something. Automatically, without human intervention. Because today they're basically doing this with humans. They're telescope operators in a room that look at the data all the time, 24/7, because the instrument is running 24/7. And they basically manually inspect the data and see if something happens, but they don't catch everything. So sometimes it's a very small, tiny distortion of the signal that they don't catch. And then only months after doing the real observation, they figure out, something was wrong, the telescope was broken, and my data is worthless. And now we try to do that ahead of time or in real time, figuring out what is wrong.
Coming back to where we started this conversation, like the insane exponential rate in which like hardware has evolved throughout the decades. Now we're at a point where you can't even store data anymore because it's so much and the hardware can't handle it. Or even if it could, you wouldn't want it to handle it maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So where do you see this going?
Yeah, I'm not sure if there is an endpoint.
Right.
This exponential growth is often called Moore's Law. So Moore was a guy who worked at Intel in the 60s, I believe. And he already predicted back then that the computational power, or what he really said is the number of transistors on a chip, would double every 2 years, roughly. But we are sort of nearing the end, because that only works if you make transistors smaller and smaller. And they're now so small that they only a few atoms in size.
A few atoms?
Yeah, okay. Atoms, yeah. Yeah. So at some point, you cannot make it smaller than an atom, or at least all this quantum computing, but that's a whole different ballgame. So we are nearing that that's a really fundamental point, right? If you cannot make that smaller. But of course, what you can do then is make the chips bigger in size. That's already happening. You can stack them in 3D. So usually a chip nowadays is 2D, but you can actually do it in three dimensions. And you can combine multiple chips in a bigger computer.
Yeah, virtually. Right.
And that's basically what's happening. And another thing we can do, and that's also what you see already, is specialization. So you have you make chips with a very specific purpose. Again, for deep learning, for example, there are chips which are just built for making these neural networks. and they're not general purpose. Eh? They cannot do anything else. They can only simulate those neurons. And if you specialize, you basically make it more efficient.
So you said there's no endpoint, and then you said, well, there is a sort of natural endpoint.
Yeah.
And then you go on by saying, well, no.
But we're working around it, of course.
Working around it.
Yeah, yeah. But just building bigger systems out of multiple chips.
Right.
Parallelism. We try to do things in parallel and make bigger computers built out of many of those chips.
Yeah. And it's becoming more and more important, obviously, because we're also in a global energy, challenge is putting it modestly, I think.
Yeah.
That's kind of a threat also maybe to your line of work and also an opportunity. How do you see that?
We simply cannot keep on growing the way we have been doing the past decades. It's just not sustainable. And maybe even if we could, do you really want to? So, for example, you're already designing and building the successor of LOFAR. That's called the Square Kilometer Array. That's a telescope that will be in South Africa and Australia. So even on two continents. And it will be, say, 1,000 times or maybe 10,000 times bigger than LOFAR. And wow. To power the computational, the supercomputer that you need to process all this data, you would need 6 nuclear power plants.
Sure.
Just for this single instrument.
Sure. Yeah.
If you just do a linear extrapolation of what we do today.
So you just build
that's
plants.
Not possible.
No. So, but why are you doing this project then, the Square Kilometer project? When is it like wishful thinking or hoping that by the time you get there, it will have...
Yeah, that's basically it. So okay. Designing and constructing a telescope takes more than a decade.
Okay.
And in that time, of course, if Moore's law continues and if our software optimizations continue, then we sort of expect that we can do it.
So, and who's taking this gamble?
All of us. So that's a very big consortium.
Wow.
Many different countries. So South Africa, Australia, the Netherlands is also very much involved, also with Astron, but also universities. The UK is involved, China.
Do you still own your Commodore 64 or is it somewhere?
I sold it 2 years ago, I think. Yeah. A house and children, there was no space.
Rob, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
As Rob said, you can only build these things so small. Or, as Moore himself warned in 2003, and I quote again, "No exponential is forever." However, he told the assembled engineers, "Your job is delaying forever." Thank you so much for listening. Computers Don't Bite is a podcast by the Leiden Institute of Advanced Computer Science.